And welcome once again to the Name Game. This is Bob Zanotti. We're in a quiet spot here above the Lake of Geneva. We are above the world-famous resort of Montreux on the Lake of Geneva. I came up from Montreux on a funicular railway and got off at our mystery destination, which is not completely at the end of the line. That continues. But that's the first clue. We are fairly well up the mountainside in a kind of a plateau where it's a little bit flatter here than in some other parts of this mountaintop. And from the train station, we look over here into France. We look down on the Lake of Geneva. We see the beautiful, what's called Riviera, the area of the Lake of Geneva on the north shore between Lausanne and Montreux. But there's certainly much, much more to the story. I'm walking down the road and I see someone, an old friend, and he's standing at the entrance of one of the most impressive structures you'll see anywhere. Nice. Andrew Celebras.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
You had a good journey up the hill.
I did, and it's always a pleasure to come up here. We are at what is called Mountain House, which is, I know you'll permit me the term, which we'll explain and qualify later, in a way, the world headquarters, at least at this moment, of a movement called moral rearmament. Now, that in itself might scare a lot of people. We want to talk about moral rearmament on this rather special edition of the Name Game, because it is moral rearmament, or MRA for short, that has truly put this tiny place above Lake Geneva on the map internationally. Shall we go inside?
Let's go on in. Yeah.
This is absolutely splendid.
This building is going to be 100 years old next year. And I like to think of it as an old lady who's been around, who's seen a thing or two, who's had quite an experience.
Heard of a thing or two, too, I'm sure.
Heard a thing or two, seen people come and go. It was built as a luxury hotel in the years just the turn of the last century. It opened in 1902, and the great and the famous
beautiful.
Of the world came here.
We're just in a meeting area. This is where the podium is almost like in a slightly elevated dais or a stage, and chairs. It looks like almost a chamber of parliament here. And outside, we have a beautiful panoramic view. We're looking into France over there, I believe, right over and down into the lake.
France, from the right of the mountain over there, mm-hmm. and the mountains to the left are all in Switzerland.
And a huge fireplace. I can imagine in the old days when this was a hotel, that was probably lit here during the colder months.
This would have been the salon of the hotel and the tea parlor, and you'd have had an orchestra probably playing hidden in the plants over there. If we come just to the middle, we'll hear an echo, which is rather strange. You may already start to hear it, but my voice is starting to echo now.
We can hear that.
And there's a chapter in a book by the American author Scott Fitzgerald, which is actually set in this hall and which talks about this echo, Tender is the Night. He describes the journey that you've made today up in the train, the view over the lake, and he describes exactly this spot.
It's like a dome or a cupola,
like a dome,
we could say,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And all of the acoustics come together at one focal point, like a parabolic antenna,
exactly.
And they're directed down to us here.
So this opened in 1902, and I often say to visitors, it's a little bit like the Titanic. They've seen the film, The Titanic.
Very apt.
But this was built at about the same time for the same sort of luxury, rich mm-hmm. clientele. It was built as a self-contained world with all the shops that were necessary. It had a sort of a shopping mall before shopping malls became shopping malls. And I say it was the jet set before the jets who used to live here. And one of the guests, Arthur Rubinstein, in his the great musician, in his autobiography, talks of life here being like life on a transatlantic liner. The tables and chairs that you see over there in the corner, they are actually to be seen on the photographs of the opening in 1902. Mm. And I often say that, in a way, as far as architectural heritage is concerned, the building's been very lucky that our movement never had the money to spoil it. Otherwise, we might have improved it beyond recognition. But what you're seeing is really a palace hotel.
We're going back
in
history.
From the beginning of the century, mm-hmm. almost unchanged.
Almost a walk back into history, literally.
Almost a walk back into history. We're just going to go into the beginning of one of the corridors, just so you get an idea. These are the bedrooms. going off on the front, and all of these front rooms on our left, which have this incredible view, and every single room has a balcony, they all had communicating doors between them so people could take suites of rooms.
What happened to the hotel business?
The hotel business is awfully prone to outside elements, and wars are absolutely fatal to the hotel business. Mm-hmm. And twice you can see in the guest register how within a week the guests go and your hotel is empty. Mm-hmm. So in 1914 you can see that, and in 1939. And it was the two world wars that absolutely ruined the hotel.
Mm-hmm. On the way up on the funicular, I noticed there was a medical center down below. Was this also one of the reasons why people came here for their health?
Yes, it was. At that time, of course, quite a lot of people were dying of TB, and there was no cure for it. There were no antibiotics. And one of the ideas was that the clean, pure air of the altitude would help people get over their health problems. So they sold this as a health resort with very healthy air and with saunas and salt baths
The air is still good up
the
here.
The air is still fabulous,
yes.
Yeah.
We've changed the location now. We're on a different floor. Outside is a beautiful garden. But we hear some noise in the background. It sounds like the kitchen.
You're right, it's the kitchen, and I can hear, I think, the end of the wash-up from lunch. We work in teams, and it's a marvelous way of getting to know better some of the people from around the world who are here for the conferences, working together in a team from around the world, and that experience of serving each other.
Andrew, the question begs itself. We said at the very beginning that we know over the years so many people have developed wrong impressions about moral rearmament. It just doesn't sound contemporary, and people have all kinds of ideas what this is and what it is not. Will you please straighten the record out for us? What is moral rearmament? Where does it come from? What is its philosophy and purpose?
Well, I think I'll start with where it comes from. The American who founded this movement, Frank Buchman, launched the phrase in the last years before the Second World War. What the world really needs now is a moral and spiritual rearmament, at a time when the European nations were rearming for what everyone feared would be another war, and that is what indeed
came. So instead of military arms, we needed a moral, human rearmament.
Exactly.
Human values.
Change in people's hearts, in their minds, as being an antidote to violence and war. We are in the process of, in fact, searching for a new name at the moment, because we're aware of the fact that rearmament doesn't sound good, mm-hmm. and morals sounds a bit moralizing.
But you are not the Salvation Army.
No.
No.
But I have a great respect for the Salvation Army, but we're not them. And the very simple, basic idea is that if you want to see a change in the world, you need to be ready to start with a change in yourself. But I would define moral rearmament now as an interreligious movement, so you can't compare it with a sect. We come from different religious backgrounds, but we try to help people to find in the roots of their own spiritual tradition the wherewithal to make the link between the theory and the practice. And we're trying constantly to make that link between the way I live, my own personal life, and what happens in the society around me. So we're not just interested in making men and women better men and women, happier men and women, but also more effective men and women in changing the things that need to be changed in the world around us.
We have two people here I just happen to hear in the background, and I believe they're even speaking English. We haven't arranged this, and they have no idea I'm coming. May I ask where you're from?
From Yugoslavia, Belgrade.
And where are you from?
Nottingham in England.
And I'm studying here about peace building, reconciliation, trauma healing.
I'm a police officer from England, and we are here for Hope in the Cities, hoping to take back with us some ideas and concepts, innovative change and approaches to addressing issues of underrepresentation and exclusion from a range of different areas, from education through to health and the criminal justice system.
Andrew, these are two different points of view and two different sets of interests. I guess this would be typical for the kind of information and issues dealt with here.
Yes, I think so. I think you've heard two phrases that went by rather quickly there. We had Hope in the Cities, and one of the major programs of moral rearmament, particularly growing in the United States, but now, as you heard from that young police officer from Britain, it's trying to deal with these issues of exclusion and of race relations, where in so many of our cities there are people from different backgrounds who have to learn to live and work together, and majorities that have to give their place to people from minorities. And you also heard the phrase, the Co-Scholars Program. It's been running for 10 years now, and every summer, as part of the summer conferences here, we've had students from all over the world who have been studying applied conflict resolution. Because that is very much part of the tradition of the House, is building bridges between peoples who don't get on together, who don't understand, in conflict situations.
I see you're from the United States.
Yes, I am.
What brought you here?
I came to be a part of a conference and to be a part of an entire summer here.
And what is your particular area of interest?
I work in the United States in race relations and reconciliation, and also I enjoy being a part of a larger group that are looking at aims and values.
Was it worth the trip over?
Absolutely, no question. Not even a moment's hesitation.
Thank you very much. Now, this brings up the subject, Andrew, where as we move out to the beautiful gardens here with that magnificent view of the Lake of Geneva outside. And we just heard an important word, conferences. Now, we have to make the point as we near the end of this edition of the Name Game that every year, I know over the many years of moral rearmament here in Mountain House, you have had distinguished guests and visitors and lecturers from all walks of life, leading personalities from politics and industry, science, certainly the arts and so on. And there is a strong Swiss connection between the movement and Switzerland. There is a kind of secretariat, at least in charge of the conferences. If anything resembles a headquarters, quote unquote, of MRA, I guess it would be that here in Switzerland.
Well, one of the issues on a private internal agenda for private meetings during this summer is to see whether we should create some international structure. And the talk is that if we decide to do that, if the different legal bodies in different countries decide to do that, that the official office might be here in Switzerland, and that would be a very natural thing.
Andrew Stellebras of the Moral Rearmament Movement, which, for all intents and purposes, at least once a year, is headquartered at our mystery location on today's Name Game. It's been a rather special edition, and without MRA, the place we're at today probably wouldn't be on the map, I dare say.
I think you're right. I think that's true. In the post-war years, before 1939, yes, it was known for winter sports, but the snow has gone and the ski resorts have to be higher. The rich and the famous of those years before the First World War, they've all been killed. Their families and fortunes have mostly vanished. Tourist habits change. I think without this conference center, this village would have been bypassed and forgotten.
Where have we been today? That's the question, as always, on this edition of the Name Game. We are above the Lake of Geneva, above the famous resort of Montreux. We took a funicular. There is a road leading up here, a very good road, but the classic way is to take the funicular. There is a station here right down the street, just a couple of hundred meters away. Andrew Stellebras, thank you very much for taking the time. You're a very busy man these days, and lots of luck playing the Name Game.